Welcome to our old parish church of St Peter in Pembrey. The first known record of Pembrey is contained in Textus Profensis about 1120. It tells of the manors of Pepembury Magna and Pepembury Parva. The next mention is of these manors with the advowson being granted by Simon de Warhol to the Abbey of Baham, about 1239. So it is evident that there must have been a church here which was early 12th or even late 11th century. Its plan and the remains of Norman architecture also point to this. The first certain date in connection with the church is 1337. Most of the present building was built by John Culpepper of Bay Hall. He also built the Chantry Chapel of St Mary in the churchyard in 1355. This chapel was 30 feet long and 18 feet wide, and was entirely covered with lead. Exactly where this chapel stood, nobody seems to know, and so far, no references have thrown any light upon it, though foundations of some kind have been discovered at the east end of the church. It was pulled down, apparently, at the dissolution of the smaller monasteries in 1547, and the three windows in the body of the church were inserted with the money gained from the sale of the lead. Culpepper, it is recorded, did all this work as a thank offering to Almighty God for his restoration to the royal favour and to the good of his soul for ever. For it seems that in 1323 the family had had to forfeit Bay Hall to the Crown for an insult to Edward II at Leeds Castle near Maidstone. At about the same time as he was restored to royal favour, John Culpepper married a very wealthy lady of the Hardrushall family, and it was her money which helped to build the church and Chantry Chapel. The parish church stands on the slope of a picturesque ridge surrounded by woodland and is dedicated to St Peter. The stone used in its construction is local sandstone, and as you look at it, you see three distinct dates. The bottom part of the nave is of irregular sized and shaped stone, which contains quite a lot of iron ore. The tower and chancel are still all shapes and sizes, but of rather better workmanship. The three top courses of the nave are square cut and of a later date, when the roof was raised to allow a gallery to be installed. To the right side of the porch is a small round-headed window, the lower part of which is cut off by the roof line of the porch. The window is very small externally, but is deeply splayed on the interior. The roofs of the nave and chancel are of handmade clay tiles. The tower is covered with cedar shingles. Before 1950, these were in oak, but were in very poor condition. It was also found that much damage was being done by Death Watch beetle. A big effort was made over 2 or 3 years to put these troubles right. The architect was unable to find oak shingles, as the art of splitting them seemed to have died out, and that is why the cedar ones were used as a replacement. Another interesting feature of the chancel is the presence of armorial bearings, which are cut in relief on the stones of the buttresses. The three on the south side are original, as they were placed there when the buttresses were built. The first to be seen on the western buttress of the chancel is the arms of the Culpepper family. The second armorial bearing on the central buttress is that of the Hardrashaw family into which John Culpepper married. The third is a shield bearing a cross, like the cross of St. George, probably the arms of William, Earl of Ulster. There are also two armorial bearings on the north side, but these were not cut in the original stone. The first is the arms of the Woodgate family, which is very attractive. The other coat of arms is that of the Amherst family, twice quartered with Daniel and Tyson. In the wall of the south side of the chancel is a small door which cannot be opened, for it is blocked up on the inside. Until 1892, Pembry Hall was the vicarage, and at one time it was common for the priest to come already robed, so no doubt he entered the church by this small door. As you enter the church, on the wall to the left you will find a list of vicars. This was the handiwork of John Jarman in 1947. When the last rector resigned in 1278, the parish was then in the care of the Abbot of Bayham until the dissolution of the monasteries. It is interesting to note that William Poyce, Richard Woodward and John Whittaker were vicars of Pembry for over 50 years, whereas in 1465 and 1533 there were two vicars in 1 year. Also, during the period of the Civil War, there were several quick changes. The roof of the nave is a specimen of tie beam and king post, and it's said to be one of the best of its type in the country. If you stand in the centre of the tower arch and look straight down the length of the building, you will see that the chancel arch is 14 inches out of line. This is fairly common in many old churches, and it is said to have been done to put the devil off his track if he should pass through the church at night. The tower is now used as a choir vestry, and from here the bells are rung. When the upper church was built in 1847, one of the bells in the parish church was cracked. It was recast and hung in the upper church and is still there. This left three in the parish church, and in the early part of this century, two more cracked. In 1924, an anonymous friend of the church had all three bells recast, and Miss Caroline Finch bought a new one, thus making up the original number of four. They are now fitted with a chiming apparatus. The bells are in a fixed position with ropes fitted on the clappers at one end, with the other end finishing in a rack on the wall so that one person may ring all four. The beautiful blue and gold curtains hanging in the tower arch were made for the annex of Westminster Abbey for the coronation of Queen Elizabeth II. Lady Wilson of Kenard was largely responsible for this gift to the church. On the north wall there is a brass with an inscription, which you can read for yourselves, and above this inscription is the figure of an Elizabethan girl. There are two slabs in the sanctuary floor to the memory of the Amherst family. One slab has an inscription in Latin. There was also, at one time, a helmet belonging to Richard Amherst placed on a bracket on the north side of the tower arch, but this was stolen a few years ago. In 1860, many alterations were made to the parish church. The floor of the chancel, which had been on the same level as the nave, was raised 2 steps, thus concealing an interesting old tombstone of one of the Culpeppers set in the original floor. The writing round the edge of this stone tells us that Margaret, the daughter of Sir Thomas Culpepper, is buried here. The musicians' gallery over the tower arch and the gallery on the south wall were also removed at this time, as were the box pews. Before the 1860 alterations, the pulpit was a 3-decker with a sounding board on the top, the priest taking most of the service from the middle deck and going to the top one for the sermon, while the lower deck was occupied by the verger, or Amen Man, as he was usually known. It is said that there were 2 stones with crosses in the porch, but there is no trace of them now, so they must have been taken away when the church was restored. A reminder of pre-Reformation days is the piscina in the south wall under the Red Cross flag. There is not much doubt that the front of this has been cut off, for when these were in use, they mostly were a small basin with a pipe running from it straight into the ground, and this is where ablutions were carried out after Mass. The Red Cross flag is the one which flew on the Institute for nearly 5 years, from the outbreak of war in 1914 until the last wounded man left in 1919. The flag was brought to the parish church some years after the war, at a special service attended by most of the detachment who had served under it. In the late 1920s, main electricity was introduced into the church. Before this, the body of the church was lighted by oil lamps on wall brackets, and in the chancel there were candles in groups of 3 on brass standards. These standards passed up through the bookrests of the choir stalls to just above the singers' heads. The east window is in memory of 2 Woodgate vicars, Stephen and George Stephen, with their wives. Until 1944, this window is a very dark blue. During 1944, several pilotless planes, or doodlebugs, dropped in Pembrey, and one fell in the grounds of Kent College, the blast from which damaged this window. The coloured figures were saved, but when it was reassembled, the lighter background was used. There are several memorials in the chancel to various members of the Woodgate family, including a recent one dedicated in 1969 to the memory of James Hamilton Davidson Houston of Pembrey Hall, whose wife was the daughter of the Reverend R.S.S. Woodgate, and the last of this great family to have lived in the village. So much for the interior of the church. Let us now look at the outside of the building and the churchyard. On the right-hand side of the porch, a few yards along the path, there is a high box vault. In this vault are the remains of Anne West, who lived at Bay Hall. She died in 1803 at the age of 34. Having once had a dream that she was buried in a trance, it became such an obsession with her that she made provision in case it should actually happen. An opening 2 feet square was left in the side of the vault, and the lid was left off her coffin. Her bailiff was instructed to take food and drink there every day for 12 months, in case she woke up. Unfortunately, she did not. For his services, the bailiff inherited the whole of her monetary wealth, except for £100 which was paid to the vicar for allowing the grave to remain open. A grating was put in the opening, and until 1946 you could look down into the vault and see her remains lying in the coffin. In 1946 it was decided to brick up the opening, because during the Second World War, troops who had been billeted nearby had interfered with the remains, and it was rather unsightly. You can still see where the opening was at the eastern end of the vault. Opposite this box vault, on the other side of the path, is a grave with a twin headstone. Herein lie the remains of Sir Samuel Morton Peto and his wife. The Lych Gate is also a memorial to him. He was a prominent nonconformist, and as an MP, he was responsible for the passing of a bill which allowed a nonconformist parson to conduct a burial in an Anglican churchyard. As it happened, it is thought that he was the first person to be buried under this act. He and his partner John Betts, who also lived in the village, were the heads of a firm of public works contractors in the 19th century. They were responsible for the building of at least 1/7 of Britain's railways, and many big buildings, including a large part of the Houses of Parliament. Sir Samuel was also a personal friend of Florence Nightingale, and was able to help her by lending large numbers of tarpaulins for shelters for the wounded in the Crimean War. He also helped the Great Exhibition of 1851 by offering to give it his backing. It appears that while dining at his club one day, he overheard a conversation between the directors of the exhibition, who were seated at the next table. It was obvious that they were in financial difficulties, and so he went over to them and said that they might use his name if that would help to further the project. As soon as people knew that it had his backing, things began to improve. Sir Samuel was also responsible for helping to build the Free Church in Pembrey. Going back to the Lych Gate, another thing worthy of note is the coffin rest in the centre. And to the right of the Lych Gate is a mounting block which people use to help them to get on their horses. In 1977, it was found that a great deal of money was needed to repair the floor and roof of the nave of the church. There was a suggestion that the parish church should be closed down, but at a village meeting it was decided by a large majority that it should remain open. At this meeting, a society to be known as the Friends of Pembrey Parish Church was formed. This group set to work immediately to raise the necessary cash. There were various grants available which went some way towards the total cost, leaving about £12,000 to be raised by the parishioners. Thanks to the enthusiasm of many people connected with the village, this sum was raised in 12 months. The Friends are still very active with their money-raising efforts, as it is quite obvious that a great deal will be needed to finance this building in the future, and it is our wish that we should keep everything going. We hope that you have enjoyed your visit and that you will come again sometime.